At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. The phone number, 877-973-7425. You can text ENGAGE to 33777. Get your tickets to the gathering. If you're a young professional, use the discount code YR. You get a pretty hefty discount. Just had a nice exchange with J.D. Vance. I forgot he had my cell phone. I had his, he had mine. We had a nice exchange. I just reminded him his wife, way more awesome than he is. So let's talk about J.D. Vance. I like J.D. Vance. We don't agree on everything. I think we probably agree more than we disagree, but I do disagree with him on some economics. But I want to start with this. I think it was February of 2016. I was on a train from New York to Washington. Yes, first class, Acela Express, no less. And I was banging away at my keyboard, writing a piece that would become legendary. Said, I will never vote for Donald Trump. And Aaron Gardner was the deputy editor of Red State at the time, and he texted me and said, change it to never Trump. Use the hashtag NeverTrump on Twitter. It'll go viral. I did as he said. Well, to this day, people use the phrase NeverTrump. Your host is the one who I think came up with it, and it was really Aaron Gardner who came up with it. And someone who circulated that piece was a guy in Ohio who had written a very famous book called Hillbilly Elegy. His name was J.D. Vance. He not only was a never-Trumper, but he went on television and said that Donald Trump was a fascist and referred to Donald Trump as American Hitler and said he would never vote for Donald Trump. We both voted for Evan McMullen and then saw what happened with Evan McMullen. May God forgive us. And then reality can be a teacher. We saw the Democrats go off the rails. And Donald Trump delivered his promises. And despite all the personal drama, the mean tweets, all that stuff, it turns out that Donald Trump was a fairly middle-of-the-road Republican president. Not really as conservative as his advocates would say, not as liberal as his critics would say, not nearly the authoritarian people would say. Still say January 6th was bad. Still find it discrediting, still have issues with it, but more and more Americans, they'd prefer the Trump administration to the Biden administration. Even majority of Americans who don't like Donald Trump would prefer he be back in office, or at least his policies be back in place. J.D. Vance is one of those people. J.D. Vance didn't like Donald Trump. There are a lot of people saying, oh, this is just an opportunistic flip. Having made this flip myself, it wasn't opportunistic. Look, the number of people who tell me, oh, you say what you say because you would lose your job. I was completely contradictory to my audience in 2016. My whole audience was angry with me for not supporting Donald Trump. My ratings actually went up. They didn't go down. People were tuning in. You never knew what I would say. To this day, number one thing people say about this program, you got no idea what Erickson's going to say. They tune in to see. You know where I am. In 2020, I said, you know, it clearly is to me a choice between Republicans and Democrats. Trump's not my cup of tea. I don't particularly care for his character, but I prefer his policies. I'll vote for him. J.D. Vance was in the same boat. By 2022, he ran for the Senate, got elected in Ohio. He's the U.S. Senator from Ohio. And now he's the Republican nominee for Vice President of the United States. I know him. We chatted earlier. reality is a great teacher. The Democratic Party is now a party driven by woke policies, high inflation, and weakness on the world stage. The world was not on fire when Donald Trump was president. Thanks to his judicial picks, Roe versus Wade is dead. Trump also spoke up for the working class. In 2016, J.D. Vance said he thought it was very cynical of Donald Trump, that he didn't believe Donald Trump cared about the working class. He's changed his mind over time. Vance, of course, cares deeply about the working class. As a actual conservative, not just someone who uses the label, but someone who actually is a conservative, a small government, socially conservative conservative, I've got concerns with J.D. Vance. I like him a lot, personally, but he's more of a Roosevelt Democrat than a Reagan Republican. He doesn't necessarily want smaller government, and he, I think, correctly identifies a lot of the economic problems of the country, but offers some bad solutions to them. He hasn't drifted right so much as the Democratic Party's gone nuts and drifted far left. But Reagan was far more practical than mythology would give him credit, I think. There is a difference, though. Ronald Reagan said the nine scariest words in the English language were, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help." J.D. Vance actually believes the government can do more good at helping people than I think it's capable of. He's been a loud voice in the GOP in support of Lina Khan, the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, who is a terrible appointee who's destroying businesses across America. He's not an advocate of free markets. He supports tariffs. He's fine with government industrial policy, which I think really just created a Potemkin village around industrial towns hiding their collapse on the inside. But he's more than that. He's a complex man. He's a great man. He's a family man. He's a good guy. Loves his family, loves the Lord. He's got a compelling biography. You should read Hillbilly Elegy if you haven't. He's spoken up about the forgotten people of America, the working class, the white working class of Appalachia that has way more in common with poor blacks in this country than they do with white people. And yet the left sees everything in this country through an intersectional race-based lens. And so they see white people in Appalachia and say, oh, they must have it good. They're privileged. They're white. When actually, in many cases, they have it worse than poor blacks in urban areas who have greater access to social services than those in Appalachia do. He's a strong advocate for families and strong families, given his upbringing. He's also a deeply empathetic person. He actually does care about people. He's married to a daughter of Indian immigrants. He is the American dream. His family is the American dream. For those of you who don't know, he was raised largely by his grandmother in Appalachia, dirt poor, a family battle with drugs and alcohol. He wound up becoming a Marine. Joe Biden voted for the Iraq War. J.D. Vance served in the Iraq War in combat as a Marine. He went to Yale, got a law degree, moved to California, became a venture capitalist, worked for Peter Thiel, started his own VC group, has made good money, was an author. His wife met him at Yale. They got married. She's a successful lawyer, corporate lawyer. They live in Ohio. We disagree on Ukraine. He thinks we shouldn't be fighting to help Ukraine or supporting Ukraine. I think if we don't support Ukraine, we're going to have spillover effects. But also, I do like that given his time in the military, he's deeply skeptical of nation-building projects, and I think we all should be. He's been on the outside of government in the private sector. And it's very possible that though he and I may disagree on some things, we agree on a lot of things, and it is possible that in governing behind the wheel of the ship of state, he changes his mind. He changes his mind on issues. He sees things differently. But who can deny this? This is without a teleprompter. This is without notes. This is the J.D. Vance that you need to consider.
I think that we should fight for the right of every American to live a good life in the country they call their own, to raise a family in dignity on a single middle-class job. It's a simple vision that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should be able to live a good life in this country that is your own, that was built by your grandparents and parents, that will be inherited by your children. Now, it's, of course, more complicated in some ways than it sounds. I think that requires that we respect our history in order to give that to people, so that people are anchored in the traditions of this country, so that they can teach their children those traditions, and so they can pass off a feeling of rootedness in their own community. That's why, of course, we worry about the assault on our history in our schools. I think it requires that we give our children and ourselves the right to speak openly and participate meaningfully in this democratic society of ours. That's why we worry so much about censorship, whether it comes from the government or whether it comes from the big corporations. I think that it requires that we live and have work that has dignity and is meaningful. That's why we worry about our trade and economic policy, so that the people who do work hard and play by the rules actually have good jobs there to employ them. It's why we worry about our foreign policy, so that we don't send people to wars that have no connection to our national interest and end up depleting our country of its most useful resource, the young men and women who fight for our military. All of these things, all of the battles that we fight, as complicated as they are, affect and implicate this question of whether we're enabling the people, the citizens of this country, to live a good life in their own nation.
That's J.D. Vance. I don't know who can disagree with that. It's well stated. It's without a teleprompter. It's without notes, something that Joe Biden isn't capable of doing. Now, why J.D. Vance? Well, first of all, as I understand it, he and Glenn Youngkin were the final two. In fact, some on the inside there, I was alerted to the fact that Youngkin was on his way to Milwaukee yesterday unexpectedly, and he's coming to the gathering. He'll be there the opening night, August 8th, with us hanging out with the crowd, and that this may disrupt what was going on, could disrupt his schedule. Obviously, reading into that, it sounds like he's the VP pick. And then suddenly he came out of nowhere to join the Virginia delegation completely unexpectedly. Like, nope, that's he just got rejected apprentice style. And so it wound up being Vance. My understanding and multiple reports say the same thing, that Donald Trump Jr. is a huge friend of J.D. Vance, and in the lull made a hard pitch at the last minute for Donald Trump to pick Vance, and he agreed as a friendship there. Now, I'm going to say something. Don't shoot the messenger here. You've heard me say lots of nice things about J.D. Vance. I do like the guy. We disagree on some stuff. I think he's a fine guy. He doesn't add to Trump's coalition. Don't believe me. Believe Nate Silver, who gives Trump a 75% chance of winning and says J.D. Vance is probably the one pick who can change that and help the Democrats. He every single person who likes J.D. Vance, except for maybe like 20 people in the country, everyone who likes J.D. Vance is already a Trump supporter, so he doesn't add to Trump's coalition. In fact, J.D. Vance could, because of his economic policies, alienate some of the free market, small government people who were hoping that Trump was going to have a change of heart and may sit on the sidelines. He may do more harm than good in that respect. Maybe. What I know for sure is he's not going to broadly expand Trump's coalition. Glenn Youngkin could have gotten him suburbanites and in the investor class. Tim Scott might have been persuasive to younger black men. Marco Rubio to younger voters and Hispanic men. Vance doesn't expand the coalition. But here's something that J.D. Vance does that none of the rest of them could do. He has the closest ideology to what Donald Trump has advanced as America First. He has the closest ideology to what MAGA means to people. And he's 39. Donald Trump constitutionally can only serve 4 more years in office. J.D. Vance could go another 8 after that. He could be 12 years in office and can reshape the Republican Party for better or worse. Be more Pat Buchanan than Ronald Reagan without a lot of the hardcore staunch social conservative planks. In fact, a lot of the staunch pro-life activists today are the ones least excited about J.D. Vance. They perceive him to be moderate, even as his rhetoric is very pro-life. His positions they think aren't. He's come out for the abortion bill and letting states decide. Regardless, he can be a great hatchet man for Donald Trump as well. I mean, Kamala Harris, J.D. Vance debating Kamala Harris on stage is like Albert Einstein debating that hook thug girl. Democrats who question his experience and say, oh, I can't believe that Donald Trump would pick this guy. He doesn't have much experience. He's got as much experience as Barack Obama had becoming president, plus active combat duty experience. Donald Trump is essentially not going to expand his coalition. This is the pick of someone who thinks he's won. He's going for legacy. J.D. Vance can expand his legacy. He can realign the party of Reagan in ways that Donald Trump can't. And the realignment is going to happen after Trump is gone. The future of the Republican Party is probably going to be bitterly contested in 2028 with the direction of the country, with J.D. Vance as Donald Trump's heir to align the party in a different way. But you know what? Donald Trump is battling an octogenarian who himself is having a hard time keeping his party together. Former Democrat who declared Donald Trump was the second coming of Adolf Hitler, J.D. Vance is actually going to wind up being hated more than Donald Trump was by the left, because they'll view J.D. Vance as an apostate who betrayed his side. And he just might be the vice president of the United States, the first millennial to be vice president of the United States, the first millennial to be a major party nominee for national office. What a time to be alive.
When the world seems crazy, he'll keep you sane. It's the Eric Erickson Show. Want Eric's weekly recipes? They're super delicious. Text recipe to 33777 now.
Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, you want to know how the left is taking the J.D. Vance nomination for vice president? Here's progressive Joyce Vance on CNN last night. No relation.
He beat them all.
Court who overturned Roe versus Wade, which has been the conservative goal for conservative the last 50
and he's
years.
Done some conservative, but he is not the same as Ted Cruz. He is not the same as the Heritage. He's not an orthodox conservative Republican in the way you all have tried to define or malign them for the last several decades. He's different, and everybody knows it, and it's one of the reasons he has some working class
appeal. I agree with you, because a traditional conservative Republican would not support an insurrection. A traditional conservative Republican would not say he's going to pardon traitors and
Joyce
treasonous
Vance
people who attacked our government.
You're
correct. He's not. He's worse. He's worse. And he's much worse. But I think, you know, part of the reason that J.D. Vance matters isn't for these kind of short-term electoral calculations. He matters because of what he means to the Republican Party long-term. This is cementing a kind of nationalism.
Yeah.
Now, Trump, to your point, I agree with you. He's an instinctive, impulsive, intuitive nationalist. J.D. Vance is an ideological nationalist. That's a much more dangerous virus, because he can make this, he can polish this stuff and make it seem palatable to people.
J.D. Vance is a much more dangerous virus than Donald Trump. I told you they'll hate him more because he used to be one of them and is no longer. Hillsdale College wants to remind you about our founding and the precious virtues of the United States. They want to give you a free copy of the Declaration of Independence. You can get it by going to ericforhillsdale.com, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. You go to ericforhillsdale.com, you fill out the form, you watch the great video on Thomas Jefferson. It actually is a great video. I myself have watched it at ericforhillsdale.com. You put in your email address, you can get the free copy of the Declaration of Independence. Or you were a friend. Now, here's the cool part, actually. If you scroll down the site towards the bottom, you'll see some classes that you can take from Hillsdale College. You can get the video classes, take them at your own pace. It's a great, great product, particularly the stuff on the Constitution and the founding. Just a lot of great insight. What you do is you go to ericforhillsdale.com, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. You let Hillsdale College take care of you and get that free copy of the Declaration of Independence at ericforhillsdale.com today.
He's got the courage to tell you the truth, because the truth is what matters. You're listening to the Eric Erickson Show.
Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number is 877-973-7425. should you wish to be on the program. Kellyanne Conway was on Fox and Friends this morning discussing J.D. Vance.
The senator from Ohio in his sights is a possible VP pick. Right. I'm very impressed with J.D.'s background, his pedigree at Yale, but coming really from nothing and rising up the true American dream. And I think Senator Vance represents not just a forgotten man, forgotten woman, forgotten child, but he represents a ton, millions of Americans who didn't care for Donald Trump when he first ran, who didn't believe he could win or that he could govern. And I felt like his interview last night with our Sean Hannity revealed that. I felt there was a certain humility and a certain explanation of policies and results are the best way to explain the Trump presidency, the Trump candidacy. So I was struck by President Trump commenting to a different network when asked, how do you plan to use J.D. Vance? And he said, I'm going to leave him in Pennsylvania. Now, statistically, if President Trump wins Georgia, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, it's over. Right. That gets into 270 if he protects everything else. Joe Biden is struggling in the more white states of Wisconsin and Michigan and whatnot. So that's fascinating alone, that a gentleman from Ohio can help the president seal Pennsylvania. If, of course, it's Biden-Harris.
If, of course, it's Biden-Harris. By the way, the plot continues to throw Joe Biden overboard, and the Democratic National Committee is scrambling to go on and do the roll call in advance as a virtual roll call to ensure that Joe Biden's the nominee. We'll get to that later. Right now, your phone calls, 877-973-7425. Pierce, you're up next. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric, thanks for taking my call.
A sure.
Couple things. Number one, since the assassination attempt on Trump, have you noticed the eerily silent on the gun control side?
The quiet. Yeah, as a matter of fact, yes.
And I find that strange. I mean, if that would have been, say, Biden,
they'd be all about it.
Moving in Congress already.
Yeah.
So that's amazing to me. J.D. Vance was a surprise. I actually, when I heard Nikki Haley had changed her mind and was going to the, I thought maybe. I was thinking, could he possibly have talked? Gotten her on his side and she'll be the VP?
Yeah, that one would have been really surprising. I think a lot of people thought that when it turned out she was getting invited. Vance, I do think, though, in the last 2 weeks, the conversation has been so dominantly towards Vance. I would have been surprised if it wasn't Vance.
Well, and I thought about a lot of the negatives, and immediately after that, we heard all day Saturday, all day Sunday, the media and the president and all these folks saying, hey, we got to tone down the rhetoric. We've got to quiet this. We got to get away from all this battle, this, mentality against one another, and let's talk about issues. And J.D. Vance is announced as a VP, and what do the Democrats and Biden do?
Oh, they're already back to threat to democracy must be stopped by any means. Yeah,
it's exactly.
Yeah, didn't last long. Yeah, the it's like a Christmas Day truce. Yep. Pierce, thanks very much for the phone call. 877-973-7425. Nathan, welcome to the Eric Erickson Show. Nathan?
Sorry. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just calling because I guess I'm one of those diehard DeSantis fans that saw when Trump picked Vance, who is fine as far as he goes. I wanted it to either be him or Youngkin out of the people who he was considering. But long term, I was hoping for DeSantis to be our next nominee, and I think this is going to significantly complicate that because surely Trump is going to endorse Vance if Vance decides to run for president. And so I guess I'm just kind of wishing that in some ways things hadn't gone the way they went.
Yeah, look,
what are your thoughts on that?
I honestly do think there are more Republicans disappointed than there are excited. I mean, the people who are excited are the people who are the most excited about Trump to begin with. So he doesn't really build his coalition. Youngkin would have gotten him, I think, suburbs. Would have placated some women. DeSantis would have brought the free market conservatives and some of the suburbs. Tim Scott and Marco Rubio were placed for other demographics. Rubio and DeSantis couldn't have been the vice presidential pick because of the constitutional concern about the 12th Amendment. In fact, the Trump team said yesterday that they actually were leaning towards Marco Rubio, but their constitutional lawyers told them it was a no-go given that the 12th Amendment would have come into play.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about him as kind of like how Cruz turned out, you know, like the one we wanted, but just couldn't make it over.
So let's talk about 2028 then. And Nathan, thanks for the call. 2028, yes. If J.D. Vance wants it, it's probably his, unless these 4 years of Trump don't go well, if he gets elected. If the party decides it wants a turn, and typically after two terms of one guy, they decide they want a turn, it's actually far less common for the vice president to be picked than the president, than not. Very, in American history, George H.W. Bush was the first since Martin Van Buren in the 1800s to successfully be able to get elected to a third term. I mean, you know, Obama had two terms and it went to the Democrats. Bush had two terms. It went to the Democrats there. Obama has two terms. It goes to the Republicans. Reagan had two terms. It stuck with him until people realized George H.W. Bush wasn't a third term for Ronald Reagan, but himself. They went with Bill Clinton, who got two terms, and it went to the Republicans. It's actually far less common. Now, in this case, though, Donald Trump will have had 4 years, a break for Biden for 4 years. If he gets elected, 4 years for Trump, J.D. Vance could realign the party. He could realign the party. There will be a fight, and the donors of the party will be influential in 2028 in who can raise the money. I think Vance does have to walk a more careful line in that he can't completely realign the party against free market conservatism. There is a piece, actually, let me read you part of this in Politico. The headline is, "The Trump-Vance ticket is a repudiation of free market conservatism. Economic populism has transmuted the Republican Party, and that new version of the GOP has just gone from one standard bearer to two. Donald Trump's choice of J.D. Vance as his running mate suggests he is leaning harder into the economic policy instincts that helped land his first term in 2016, and that he no longer feels the need to placate the type of free market conservatism that's dominated the party for decades. The former president's views on tariffs, spending, and immigration were no doubt a key ingredient to his electoral success, but he chose Mike Pence, a candidate with more traditional conservative free market viewpoints. Now the center of gravity has shifted, and Republicans in Congress will fill the pool if Trump wins in November. Few Republicans have been more vocally critical of the party's modern economic conventions than Vance, who has embraced not just tariffs, but also policies like a higher minimum wage and increased barriers to corporate mergers." It's true. He's a tariff guy. I'm not. He supports an increase in the minimum wage. I don't. And he's more about government-aligned industrial policy than me. I think that the government isn't smart enough to do it. We're seeing incompetence across the board. We have to be careful. I think a smaller government and reliance on free markets are good. But to Vance's point, where I think he and I agree, is that what we're seeing is that as Republicans embraced free market conservatism, what happened is the progressives took over the private sector and major corporations and steered the dollars of those private corporations towards the left. And so the GOP does have to do something to bring that back. By the way, there's some breaking news happening right now. A verdict has been reached in Senator Bob Menendez's federal corruption trial. Everyone has been summoned to court for the verdict. That case has been going on. Remember, this is the corruption case about Menendez. We will find out from a jury in the Southern District of New York here in the next little while whether or not they believe he is guilty of bribery and corruption charges. This is breaking news happening right now as I'm talking. All right, back to the phones. Corey, want to go to you. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Eric. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, my question is, there's one thing I have not heard regarding the attempted assassination of Trump. You know, yes, it was a huge close call. There was an incredible lack, an incredible failure of security surrounding the event. The what if that comes to mind with me is, what if this attempt had been executed, initiated by a well-organized terrorist or terrorist organization instead of a 20-year-old kid and, you know, a lone actor? And will the terrorist element in the world not be looking at this and saying, wow, what an opportunity? Because obviously the Secret Service doesn't have what it takes anymore.
Yeah, okay, that's a great question. Here is what I have been told by a number of people I tend to believe, that it's actually easier to disrupt the organized event than to disrupt the lone wolf. In fact, the growing concern from the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service, national intelligence operatives is lone wolves being inspired to attack, who don't go online, who don't leave social media footprints, who don't leave footprints in chat rooms and do it all themselves, that they are way harder to stop. And that appears to be the case in this situation. From what we know of this 20-year-old, he wasn't really active on a lot of social media. He wasn't, he was very much a loner, very isolated existence, didn't talk to people beyond his parents for the most part. That's way harder to find. You get terrorists together in their super secret backdoor channels on Telegram and the like. There are actually a lot of spies there. They can find them. They can listen to the conversations. They can figure out what's going on. It's way harder to do the lone wolf situation. And that appears to be the situation here. That appears to be the situation that this guy was lone wolf. We'll get into that because I got a lot to say more on this. But we're going to have to find out. There's going to have to be an investigation. You know, a couple of notable moments at the RNC last night. In fact, a buddy of mine, let me find his message that he sent me earlier, because this is worth noting that happened on the first day of the Republican convention. The Teamsters Union president spoke. He opposes tax cuts. He opposes regulatory relief for American workers. He attacked right to work from stage and got a very cold reception for that. He advocated for left-wing policies to the GOP last night. Amber Rose spoke. She's an openly pro-abortion celebrity whose claim to fame is, well, pornography. She wants to appeal to younger voters and got on stage and said she was essentially duped by the left into hating Donald Trump, but she's supported Satanism and abortion. David Sachs was there, the billionaire who's just a nutter, as best I can tell. He blamed NATO for Putin's invasion of Ukraine. The crowd did not like his speech at all. The boos in the crowd were a reminder, I think, that the GOP isn't down for betraying NATO and embracing Putin. And then you got the skirmish over the pro-life platform. It was gutted. Planks of the pro-life platform that have been there since Ronald Reagan have been gutted now, as well as now support for tariffs, a rejection of fiscal reforms to rein in the national debt. These are the things conservatives are up against within the GOP right now. Now, the Republican Party has never been a conservatives party. And people forget this. They use conservative and Republican synonymously. Conservatives are part of the coalition, but they do not run the party. There are a group of people who have come into the coalition and the party who now feel like they can push everybody else out, that it's their party now. They're going to have to come to the same accommodations that conservatives have had to come to, that you don't actually control the party. The Republican Party is a hodgepodge of populists and nationalists and isolationists and free marketeers and social conservatives and globalists, and everybody's got to find a way to accommodate each other, and this is now going to be the difficult path that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have to go down, is to try to find some level of unity. But, I mean, the bottom line is that you will get some level of unity for the election, and then you fight it out once you've won. Those policy fights will come, but first you got to win. Now, Americans for Prosperity wants to win. They are the largest grassroots organization in the country. They're the leading grassroots organization in the country. They want you to be a part of the fight at AmericansForProsperity.org. Americans for Prosperity is a do tank. They're not a think tank. They operate in the 50 states as well as Washington, D.C. They don't just mobilize members of Congress to vote. They mobilize the grassroots in this country to push members of Congress to vote the right way on things. They advocate for secure borders and education reform, free market reforms to education. They advocate for the American family. They advocate for free market principles and for the family across the nation. They would love to have you a part of them. They teach you how to knock on doors. They mobilize the grassroots to persuade neighbors, to persuade legislators. They've got chapters throughout the country. Just go to AmericansForProsperity.org today. You can find your chapter and you can join. You can be an activist with Americans for Prosperity. You can advocate for free markets, for free principle, for free speech, for the American family. All of this available at AmericansForProsperity.org. Go sign up with a local chapter today. Become a more effective activist for free markets and free people. AmericansForProsperity.org.
Want to be on the show?
Hello?
I love your show.
Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. I hope you have had a great last few days. Did you see the home run? Did you see the national anthem last night? Did you hear about it? Y'all, it was pretty bad. By the way, I should say this hour is brought to you by First Liberty Building Loan. If your business needs a loan, reach out to First Liberty, firstlibertyga.com, firstlibertyga.com.
Broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watch, we're so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare.
It was bad. Y'all, it was not good. It has been a bad week for ears in this country, has it not? My goodness gracious. That was just painful. Not as painful as an AR whizzing past your ear, but gosh, listening to, even the players, like they had their hats off, and some of them were putting their caps over their faces and they were laughing. It was that bad. Fergie has been redeemed now after that. You remember Fergie several years ago at the NBA game sang the national anthem, and it was a disaster. This was a country singer, and she didn't really, Ingrid Andress, I've never heard of her, but my goodness, that was not good, and all of us had a small tinge of sympathy for the pain in Donald Trump's ear after hearing that, I'm sure. This just in, breaking news happening now. Senator Bob Menendez has been convicted by jury at his corruption trial. The jury has just rendered its verdict. Guilty on these counts. Federal prosecutors in New Jersey prosecuting Bob Menendez for corruption, bribery, trying to use his influence to help a foreign national government. He had money and gold bars sewn into his suits, among other things. The jury in court in New Jersey, the Southern District of New Jersey, has now found him guilty. Guilty on all counts. Guilty on all counts. Federal corruption trial happening right now. Bob Menendez, he will now be stripped of his seat in the United States Senate. The Senate Democrats, the Republicans in the House went on and got rid of George Santos. The Senate Democrats have held on to Menendez in large part because it would be a 50-50 Senate, and they didn't want that. So now they got to boot him. Being convicted under the rules of the United States Senate, Menendez will have to be pushed out of the Senate. That will happen by the end of the week, according to Senate sources already. They will move quickly to strip him of his position. So that's happening right now. When we come back, there's new details about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump and why that roof was not covered. Unbelievable details. We need to chat about this and the growing volume of conspiracy theories surrounding the plot to assassinate Donald Trump that, thank God, was not able to come to fruition.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.